Good day, everyone. Welcome to today's Jurisdiction 15, Kentucky Part B, Ask the Contractor Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I will turn the call over to Deanna Minshew.
Thank you, Mark. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's Cigna Government Services Ask the Contractor teleconference for our new Kentucky Part B providers in Jurisdiction 15. My name is Deanna Minshew of the Jurisdiction 15 Implementation Team, and I will be your facilitator for today's call. I am joined today by our team of experts from across our Medicare organization, and together we will be providing you with information and then taking your J15-related questions once we get to the Q&A portion of today's call. I'm going to begin our call by turning things over to Clayton Waybright, our J15 ABMAC Implementation Project Director, for some opening comments. Clayton.
Thank you, Deanna. On behalf of the Jurisdiction 15 Management, Operational Management Team, I would like to welcome you to today's ACT call. This will be the final implementation-related ACT call as we convert into ongoing formal operations. As you know, we are now fully operational with the Kentucky Part B workload, and we did make it through the transition with no major issues. So I'm pleased with the participation from the providers as well as our internal preparations to ensure that we had a seamless implementation without impacting or disrupting any of the processing of the administrative functions. We continue to work with NGS in finalizing some activities, but all of the provider-related Medicare processing is currently being performed by our operational management staff for Jurisdiction 15. A lot of the questions and a lot of the things that we want to hear from you today are what are those things that you're seeing as you're migrating to CGS from NGS. There are differences in capabilities and differences in processing, and through all of the changes, we're wanting to hear from you those things that we could look at improving in the future. So again, welcome to the Jurisdiction 15 ABMAC. And as we go through the changes, we're looking forward to providing great service moving forward. Deanna?
Thank you, Clayton. In our usual format, we're going to begin today with some news and reminders for you, and then we will move on to the open question and answer portion of the call. As Clayton stated, on April 30th, 2011, Cigna Government Services did assume full responsibility for the Kentucky Part B workload. At that time, National Government Services transferred all of their historical, pending, and in-process operations to CGS. Remember, regardless of the date of service, all claims processing, customer service, and payments will be handled by CGS, the J15 ABMAC, going forward. Please be sure that you are no longer sending any of your requests or inquiries to NGS at this time, and that does include overpayments or offset requests. This will delay the processing of your request. As a reminder, just prior to transition, National Government Services dropped their payment floor for all approved claims in their system. This allowed as many claims as possible to complete the processing and payment cycles prior to cutover. On our first operational day, May 3, 2011, CGS reinstated the payment floor. This will create a span of time where you have little to no Medicare reimbursement because your final NGS payments were paid much earlier than they normally would have been. Remember, the payment floor for electronic claims is 14 days, and it is 29 days for paper claims. I am pleased to announce that we have launched our operational website for Kentucky Part B providers. The web address is different from the implementation page that you had been using for transition information, so please make a note of this. To access our website for your ongoing Medicare news and information, please visit the main webpage at cignagovernmentservices.com. From this page, you will click on the tab in the upper left corner labeled Kentucky Part B. This will take you to a series of pages that contains news and information specific to Kentucky Part B providers, which does include fee schedules, educational opportunities, contact information for all of our operational units, local coverage determinations, and more. Also, if you were registered with us to receive your J15 transition listserv messages, there is no need to re-register for listserv updates. You should now be receiving daily listserv messages from CGS. However, if you're not currently receiving these email updates, we would encourage you to register for our listserv from the main page of our website. I will remind you as well that at this point you also have a new customer service phone line for your ongoing customer service inquiries and requests. That number is 866-276-9558. Let me repeat that. It's 866-276-9558. That number is different from the J15 implementation help desk that you had been contacting prior to cutover. I'll give you the implementation help desk number once again, and you will continue to use that number for outstanding EFT applications that you are following up on the status of. That number is 877-819-7109. We also wanted to remind you that CGS is subcontracting with National Government Services to provide full EDI services for Kentucky Part B providers through September of 2011. As a subcontractor, NGS will support the testing of 4010 and 5010 translations, provide primary EDI help desk support, and trading partner management. This approach is designed to minimize risk and effort as providers. The only change that you will need to make is for your contractor ID number on your electronic claim submitted to CGS beginning on April 30th. The new J15 contractor ID number for Kentucky Part B providers billing claims to CGS is 15102. Please ensure that all of your electronic claims submitted to CGS reflect this contractor ID number. Any claims received with your old contractor ID number will be front-end rejected and will require resubmission. Of course, we'd like to reserve the majority of today's call for your questions from the phone lines, so please remember when you ask a question to identify yourself by name and the name of your practice or organization. Mark, can we please open the phone lines now for questions?
Thank you very much. For the members of our telephone audience, if you would like to ask a question today, you can do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that's star 1 for a question. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure that your mute function is off so we can receive your signal. And our first question today will come from Mary Langdon, X-Ray Associates of Louisville.
Mary, and actually I have several questions. My first being, we did call customer service, and I know they did write something up for this to be looked into. I think a tier 2 took the question on our screening mammograms and screening bone densities. As of January the 1st, they were being allowed and paid at 100% with no copay nor deductible. And we are getting payments from CGS where they are paying at the 80% of the allowable and forwarding those to secondary carriers. And, you know, these are starting to kind of build up because we've already received one bulk payment and some older claims. So we know someone's looking into that, but I was not aware if you all or anyone here on the teleconference was aware of the situation.
And Mary, this is Deanna. That is one that we will need to research and assist you further with once we can gather all the appropriate information. It sounds like you've already reported the issue through our customer service channel, so we can certainly double back and check with our customer service and claims team to find the resolution on that for you. But do you mind if I take your phone number as well?
No, that's fine. 502. 894-9517.
Okay. Thank you. We will follow up on that one.
Okay. The next question I had, I know you all said things are done different between CGS and NGS with some of the things that we've noticed. when we call the IBR for like MSP information or information like that, it gives us, will tell us like that it's ESRD or it's working age, or but it will not give us the name of the carrier. CGS would actually say it's, NGS would actually say it's Anthem, or we show Humana primary. And the only thing we get is that it's a working age file or something like that. Then they do not give us liability or workers' comp information saying that we have to go to the beneficiary for that. And with us being hospital-based, you know, we don't come in contact with the patient up front, so we really relied upon the voice response unit at NGS to give us that information.
And this is Deanna again, Mary. That's actually very, very good feedback, and thank you for that. We have a team here that updates our IVR and is always following up on suggestions for things that are identified from our provider community that could be helpful for you. So we will take that back to our IVR team and see if there's any way that we could implement what you're talking about there. I believe at this time, our IVR actually gives you a code of the primary payer, and you can go out to the CMS website and plug in the code and access the information that way. But we can certainly work to see if there's any way that we can add that additional information to the IVR.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, and I could be wrong, I mean, I've done some of these, I was thinking the code wasn't it just for managed care only. I was thinking that was for managed care, but not for actual, like, working age, like if somebody has, you know, Anthem to a spouse or something.
Okay. We'll follow up with our IVR technical team and pass that suggestion along.
Okay. And then I have one more issue. The LCDs, we have an example of one chest X-ray data service March 23rd that we billed. And it was processed on May the 2nd. The payment came from CGS, and it was on. There was not a diagnosis on the LCD to cover it, according to NGS. So we filed the claim knowing that we was going to get a denial, but we wanted a written denial, you know, in case there was a secondary insurance that would pick it up. We, you know, definitely would not bill the patient. However, the claim was processed and paid by Medicare.
And on Mary, on that one, we're kind of conferring around the room, if you'll give us just a moment.
Okay, sure.
Deanna, this is Dr. Honeycutt. We did retire that policy for chest X-ray going forward. However, the claim submitted for a data service prior to transition should be processed according to the data service.
That was our understanding. And I did call customer service, and they did say it was paid based on the Medicare guidelines, but I still felt like it should have not been paid.
And Mary, it sounds like this may be another one that we need to research for you to make sure that that the edits are set up properly to go back and take a look at that LCD that was in place for that date of service. I have your phone number here. We will, when we follow up with you on the mammogram bone density issue, we will also collect information on that specific claim and research that further for you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And that's all my questions.
Okay, thanks for those, Mary.
And our next question will come from Sarah Lindsay with Graves Gilbert Clinic. Ms. Lindsay, your line is open.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. This is Sarah Lindsay at Graves Gilbert Clinic. This kind of just goes back to the question or the statement about the IVR. It does seem to be a little more difficult than the NGS. With the NGS, we, you know, could get through on a good time period, even if we had a patient on hold. And it just seems like there's so much we have to go through on this new IVR. And like the other lady was saying, you really don't get the information that we got on NGS. Is there any way of making that a little more easier
thank you for the feedback, Sarah. I know with NGS, they had a voice response IVR, and of course we use a touch tone IVR at CGS. So there will inherently be some differences there and probably some time that it takes for providers to get a little more used to that. We have put out there an IVR script on our website as well as an IVR guide to kind of help providers get a little more accustomed to working with our IVR because we know, of course, that there are some differences there. As we said, we will take all of your feedback back to our IVR technical team, and we'll certainly work with our provider community as best we can to make changes and upgrades to it that will be beneficial to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Sherry Mayberry, Kentucky Medical Services.
Hello. We also have a question in regards to the IVR. NGS, when we would contact the IVR shortly after we submitted our claim, they could tell us if the claim had been denied or processed. Well, we've called CGS on some of the claims that have recently gone, and we've been told by customer service and the IVR that we have to wait until the payment floor is met. Is there going to be any change into that where we can find that out quicker?
And Sherry, if you'll give us just a moment, we're going to consult quickly on this one. Just a moment, please.
Thank you.
All right, Sherry. Again, thank you for the feedback there. Excellent feedback today. We've conferred around the room here, and it appears that that information is available, perhaps not through the IVR, but to our customer service representatives prior to the claim meeting the payment floor time. It's more of an internal process as to how those how that information is released and when that information is released. So we're going to take this one back to our customer service team and take a look into that and see if that's something that we can adjust for you to make that a little easier.
Okay, thank you. That would be great. But when we contacted customer service, they did tell us that legally they were not supposed to give us that information. So I'm not sure why, but you may take that back as well.
Thank you for the feedback, and as I say, it may just be more of an internal guideline that we've set internally, but we can certainly visit that and see if that's something that we can relax that guideline or if that's something that needs to stay in place for a specific reason, but we will definitely take the feedback and look into it for you.
Okay, that would be great. And I have one more question. If I understood the first caller correctly, I thought they said that they were already receiving some money from CGS, and we're curious how that's happening if there was the 15-day payment floor.
And this is Clayton. Through the implementation, we did drop the payment floor for any of the claims that were holding on the payment floor for NGS at cutover. There were still claims that were in a suspense location or in other processing within the system that could have been over the payment floor timeline when it was in process at NGS. So at cutover, when those claims came to us, they came in a pending status regardless of the age. So if they were over the 14-day payment floor at NGS, but they were in a suspense location for an edit to be resolved, when we received those, we would have completed that edit and issued payment as that claim had already elapsed the time of the payment floor when it was completed.
Thank you. That makes sense.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question today, you can do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question will come from Charles Copeland, Highland Chiropractic.
Yes, thank you. I was looking through our LCD for chiropractic, and I happened to read that under the column of the use of modifiers, it says that the services rendered for covered acute conditions shall use the AT modifier. But then right underneath that, it says that services rendered for non-acute conditions shall not use the AT modifier and should not be billed to Medicare, but if a beneficiary demand Medicare be billed for non-acute conditions, the GZ modifier shall be attached. And adherence to the rules regarding the ABN notice is expected. The way that I read that, it says that rather than the AT modifier, or actually rather than the GA modifier, it's saying to use the GZ modifier. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we're no longer going to use the GA modifier. So if they want us to bill Medicare for an adjustment that is considered maintenance, we do the GZ modifier instead.
Right. That says basically non-covered by Medicare, and it's a denial code.
Okay. So for the adjustment that's maintenance, we'd use that, as well as we would do that for x-rays and exams and physical therapy?
You could do that, yes.
Okay, so you're telling me that for all of those services, including maintenance adjustments, we do the GZ modifier?
That's correct.
Okay, all right, thank you.
And we would like to take this opportunity to again remind our audience, star 1 for a question today. And next we'll hear from Nancy Horn, Software Development.
Yes, first of all, I want to say that I'm a billing service for ambulance companies, and my employees are reporting to me that your customer service, when they call customer service line, they are very, very happy with the responses and the treatment they're getting, and they feel like somebody's really trying to get them the answers that they need. So I want to give you praise and encouragement for that. And then also, I'm a little unclear on the contact on the website. Under all of your headings, you'll say send to this mailing address or forward to this mailing address. But under provider enrollment, it gives that one Cameron Hill, but it doesn't say send your 855 to this address or something. And I'm just wanting to make sure if I have an 855B that I need to submit an update on, I send it to the one Cameron Hill.
Nancy, yes, the address listed there, 1 Cameron Hill Circle, Suite 0062 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, is the correct mailing address for your provider enrollment applications, including your 855Bs.
One thing
we should indicate here that may be a difference from NGS is that we don't maintain a separate provider enrollment customer service line for you. For any specific requests or inquiries you have regarding provider enrollment, we instruct our providers to just call our main customer service phone line. And then if it's something that we need to involve a provider enrollment credentialer or something of that nature, we will put you in touch with the appropriate folks that way.
Okay, that sounds good.
Thank you so much for the feedback on our customer service line.
Yeah, I've had several of my employees come and say, I love Cigna's customer service. They were so helpful. And if they didn't, and then people actually called back, like right away, if they needed to call back. And so they were, you know, they've been very pleased with that. However, they have also reported that the IVR is not user-friendly. So I just want to get on that little bandwagon as far as getting your technical people to maybe do something different with that. And the other thing is I noticed the 14-day payment floor was dropped, and I kind of keep track because we submit claims for all of our clients every single Monday morning. We waited till Tuesday the 3rd to submit the week of the transition, but we did send on Monday, April the 25th. Those are the only payments I have not seen yet, and that 14-day payment floor has passed. So will that pick up tomorrow or next week? Because you reinstated on May 3rd, so I'm wondering if that payment floor for those claims submitted on April the 25th, if we're going to be seeing those next week, because we did not see them this week.
Nancy, thank you for the question. And on that, it really depends on every individual claim. It depends on whether the claim was considered to be a clean claim and it processed cleanly through the system, in which case it would be subject to a 14-day payment floor, or if for some reason a specific claim suspended in the system for additional editing or for additional documentation or whatever the case may be. In those cases, if a claim suspends, it would not necessarily adhere to that same payment floor that a...
Right. I understand, and I'm talking, you know, like 5,000 claims were sent out on April the 25th. So all of my clients get anywhere from a $20,000 to a $90,000 check every, you know, direct deposit every single week. So nobody got anything nowhere near that this time around. So I'm just kind of, well, I mean, we got a couple of $1,000 or a $400, but I, you know, I know that those claims didn't have that kind of a problem with them because, you know, we have a good track record.
Nancy, if you don't mind, I'd like to take your telephone number and follow up with you specifically on this one.
Okay.
Simply because of the volume that you're speaking of here, we just want to make sure that we have everything on track for you.
Okay.
And your phone number?
800-588-8891, extension 3855.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. We will be in touch, and we'll get the specifics and work from there.
Thank you very much, Deanna. And, again, I'm, you know, glad to be on board, and we're looking forward to working with you.
Thanks so much for the feedback.
And we'll pause one moment as we await additional questions. We'll take our next question from Jill Townsend, University of Kentucky, College of Dentistry.
Yes, this is Jill Townsend with University of Kentucky, College of Dentistry. And I wanted to ask if there is going to be local reps assigned.
Hi, Jill. This is Deanna Minshew. We have a very large and knowledgeable provider outreach and education team that will be working directly with our providers in Kentucky as well as the rest of the jurisdiction once we bring on those operational segments. Our current provider outreach staff is not physically in the state of Kentucky. However, you will be hearing from our team via teleconference and webinars. We will continue to host face-to-face education in and around the state. So there will be plenty of opportunity for education moving forward and probably very similar formats to what you were used to with national government services.
Okay. The reason for the question is there are times that we have very difficult cases that it is has been helpful in the past to have a person to go to resolve an ongoing problem.
And what we would recommend in those instances, because we do use our provider outreach staff in a slightly different manner, so what we would recommend is if you do have an escalated issue or you're starting to see a trend where you need some assistance,
is to always route those inquiries through customer service, just as you normally would with any other inquiry, and it will actually be routed through the call center. So if it's something that we need to involve our provider outreach staff in, we certainly will. Or if it's something that we need to involve our medical director or claim staff or whomever, we'll get the appropriate people for you working on that and get it escalated to resolution.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jill.
And next is Christina Hamilton, Family Internal Medicine Associates.
Hi, I just had a couple, one's a comment, one's a question. On the IVR, I agree with the other callers. It's just not user-friendly. With NGS, we were able just to go to the IVR, and it would tell us if Medicare was primary or secondary. And if it was secondary, it would tell us what they had on file as their primary health insurance or a liability or workers' comp. It would give us the name. So that would very much be helpful, and it would alleviate some of the phone calls we have to make to customer service. The other thing, unless I can't see, is on the website, I see the physician fee schedule, but what about the lab fee schedule?
Okay, Christina, thanks again for the IVR feedback. Again, we'll take that information to that team and see what we can work out for you there. On the fee schedule page, if you are on the fee schedule page, there should be two sections there. The top of the page allows you to search by code, and that's the physician fee schedule. It is searchable, and you can plug in a specific code, and it brings up that specific information for a particular code. However, if you're looking for something that's not on the physician fee schedule, there should be a place at the bottom of that page that has a drop-down section on it that allows you to access other fee schedules. So your physician fee schedule, your ambulance fee schedule, your laboratory fee schedule, anything that's not on the physician fee schedule should be in a drop-down section at the bottom of that fee schedule page.
Now, when I click, I tried that yesterday, when I clicked the clinical lab fee schedule, it says there are no fee schedules matching your search criteria.
Okay. I don't have the web page right in front of me at this moment, but let me jot that down, and we'll check with our web team to see what has happened there and get that up and running for you.
Okay. And one other thing, I think I talked with you at the conference we had in Lexington, and I had some real health issue or questions, and you were going to get me the contact information for Susan Carrico, and I never got that.
Okay. Christina, can I get your telephone number, please?
Yes, it's 270-699-9500, and my extension is 224.
All right. We will get you your rural health contact. And as I said, we'll get the information on the clinical labs up and running. And once that is available, we'll send out a listserv message to let everyone know that that's available on the website.
And what about the IVR suggestions? Is there hope of getting that corrected anytime soon? Or are we kind of just at the mercy of...
The IVR team is a team of technical experts that works to develop the IVR product and add to it. And like I say, we do typically and often get feedback from the provider community that we're able to implement in a fairly quick way. I'm not sure specifically how much time and effort would be involved into adding names of primary payers to the IVR. That's a little bit more involved than adding coding type information and things like that.
Right.
But we can certainly work on it, and as updates are made or changes are made, again, we would publish that information on our website and through the listserv.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Christina.
Regina McLean with Kentucky Cardiology has our next question.
Yes, I have a question about drug codes. We got quite a few denials on our last remit for drug codes, and we billed it out the same way we would have billed it to NGS. It's saying it's lacking information, and I just want to make sure that we're billing it correctly to CGS. We had been putting a drug note that NGS requires for each drug claim, and I just want to make sure that if there's some certain kind of drug note we need to get drug codes paid, that we're doing that properly.
Is there a specific code that you're billing that's receiving that denial, or is it all of your drug codes?
Well, so far we've only received the one drug code back because we haven't gotten that many remits since we switched. But it's the A9555, which is rubidium used with our PET scans. It's the one we've gotten a denial on so far, but I just didn't know if it was going to be a problem across the board or if it was just that going to be that one drug.
And this was, you said the type of denial you're getting, it sounded like a rejection where the claim was missing information or lacking.
Yeah, it says lacking information, yeah.
And what was the remarks code? What was lacking?
What's the remark code on that? Sorry, I had to ask somebody with their remit. I didn't have it in front of me. It's 16, claim service lacks information which is needed for adjudication.
And there should be an accompanying remarks code that tells you specifically what was lacking or what was missing. Do you see that?
No, it just says CO16. There's nothing.
Have you?
Oh, the MA130. Okay. Your claim contains incomplete and or invalid information, and no appeal rights are afforded because it's unprocessable.
Right. Have you contacted our customer service unit for additional information on this claim?
We have not yet. I was just worried it was going to be a drug note issue, and I wanted to make sure if there had, I just wanted to check and see if there had been any changes on how we were supposed to do drug notes since the switchover.
We're not aware of any specific changes that would impact that particular code.
Okay.
So I would start with customer service and just see if they can provide you some additional details as to why that specific claim might have denied. It could be
we have four pages of that drug note of that drug code that denied, so that's why I was a little bit concerned.
Well,
yeah.
That's a bit of a different story then. May I take your telephone number and we can follow up with you specifically on that one?
Yeah, that's fine. Phone number is 859-226-0031.
Okay, thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you.
Lisa Fowler with 911 Billing Services is next.
Yes, when we were with NDS, we could call the reopening line for duplicate claims, but we can't do that now. How come?
And, Lisa, you're saying that the denial itself was for a duplicate, however, your documentation supports an actual additional service?
Correct.
Okay. I'm not sure that we have anyone here from our telephone reopenings unit on the line that could provide additional detail on that. But we will take that as a takeaway from today's meeting and follow up with our telephone reopening staff to see what the specifics are on that issue.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Lisa.
And our next question will come from Sharon Burton with Dr. Daniel A. Talley's office.
Hello. My question just was answered previously.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next we will hear from Rebecca Howarth. She is with Vanderbilt Medical Group.
Tried to register on the website this morning to be able to look at claims and things, and it wants each individual doctor's MPI, and we have over 1,500 doctors, so that just doesn't work for us. Is there any way that you can have it set up where we could do it just by tax ID?
Rebecca, we're just kind of clarifying things on our end, I think. We don't currently, or CGS does not currently offer a web portal that would allow providers to check claim status and eligibility. So what website are you referring to?
It said OPS, and I mean, when you first call, I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. That was Railroad Medicare I dealt with today, I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. That's a different contractor.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. That was Railroad Medicare. I was so excited because
okay.
we'd be able to use a website to look up stuff and that wanted each individual doctor's MPI and the last payment amount you received from the Railroad Medicare. I'm sorry. I got confused.
That's okay. Thanks for the question.
Sure.
And to clarify, before there was a question that was just asked about duplicate denials and processing those via the telephone reopenings line. And between the questions here internally, I think we may have some additional information to share on that. Because a duplicate denial would require documentation to support the additional service that's being billed, that is not something that we would traditionally handle over the phone. That's something that you'd have to send in along with the documentation to support the additional payment for that additional item or service. So it sounds like that's the reason that we don't process those on the telephone reopenings line. And that would also go for any other types of claim corrections, anything that would require documentation or require someone to actually review the information. We would request that you send that in hard copy, and we can take a look at it that way and reprocess those for you through that channel. So I wanted to make that clarification, and we can move on to our next question.
And we'll take a follow-up question from Mary Langdon with X-Ray Associates of Louisville.
Yes, this may go back to what you were just talking about, duplicate claims needing additional documentation. With NGS, when we had a claim denied or suspended, saying it was related to a liability, we, and if I knew that had medical records to show that the patient fell at home on the same day of the injury, I would call reopening at NGS and tell them it was not related to the liability you have on file, and they would reprocess the claim. When I called CGS, they said reopening said you had to call customer service. So I called customer service on several of them, and they took them. Then when I called, they said, no, now you have to send it in writing. So does that go to the same issue? Because, you know, when you call the IVR now, it does not tell you who the liability is with, where we used to know that, say, it was an auto accident or something like that, and they'd give us the name of the carrier. Now it's we don't know any information, so we have to go back to the patient, but we actually know from medical records that it did happen that day they fell at home, and, you know, there's no liability that this person is going after to pay for those claims.
Okay, Mary. On that one, we do not reprocess MSP claims over the telephone reopenings line. And just to clarify, telephone reopenings is reserved for minor claim corrections where you're correcting the number of units or correcting your submitted amount or just some very, very minor correction to a previously processed claim. However, MSP is kind of its own bear, if you will. It has a lot of additional steps and records involved with it, and it's not technically a minor thing. It is something that we do typically have to involve the coordination of benefits contractor and sometimes documentation and other payers. So it's not something that we can correct over the telephone. However, if you do find that you are running into situations where you need to have a claim reprocessed, as you were instructed through customer service, we would ask that you please send that in writing with your documentation, and we'll certainly be glad to take a look at it and reprocess it if need be.
Okay. Now, if we would call customer service, would they be able to tell us what liability information they have on file, or if they can't even give it to us through customer service?
I believe that information is available through customer service.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And T. Ferg with University Surgical Associates has a question. Ms. T. Ferg, your line is open.
Is this right?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
And Ms. Chiefer, your line is open. Please go ahead. Ann Antiford, if you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset or depress your mute function. And Ms. Minchie, we did show our line open still. At this time, we have no questions in the queue. It looks like she just disconnected.
All right. With no additional questions, we will go ahead and wrap up today's call. I do want to thank everyone for your excellent feedback. It is always beneficial to us to hear your thoughts and comments. And for those of you that did provide that, we will take those back to those departments, of course, and see what we can work on to assist you. We will follow up with those of you who have specific cases that will need follow-up. And I will remind you that there will be an audio recording as well as a transcript of today's ACT call on our website in the near future. We want to also remind you to watch our website for additional upcoming educational and ongoing opportunities through Cigna Government Services. Thank you once again for joining us, and have a great day.
And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.